The clerk will read the title of the bill.
House Bill 228, introduced by Representative Kearns. A bill for an act entitled, An Act Preserving and Clarifying Laws Relating to the Right of Self-Defense and the Right to Bear Arms, amending sections and repealing section. Mr. Chairman.
Members of the committee, you have before you in its entirety House Bill 228. What is your pleasure, Representative Kearns?
Mr. Chairman, I move when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 228. I recommend the same do pass, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kearns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the body, this bill is a little simpler than what has been made out to be. And it's especially timely with the Heller, D.C. versus Heller Supreme Court decision last June. Where our personal right to keep and bear arms was affirmed. And basically what this bill does is codify current case law and current legal opinion here in Montana. I'll briefly go through the key points of each section, and then we'll open it up to debate. Section 1, the critical component in Section 1 is subsection 5. Basically what that says is that you are innocent till proven guilty in terms of a self-defense claim. It's no more complicated than that, even though it's worded somewhat more complicated than that. Section 2, you don't have any duty to summon help or flee. Basically, this is the Montana version of the Castle Doctrine, in that the right to self-defense is personal. It travels with you wherever you legally can be. You don't have to be in an occupied structure. You, in fact, are the structure. If you're in the city park, if you're on the street, if you're standing in an alfalfa field, you have the fundamental right to defend yourself. Section 3 gets a little bit more complicated. This is the open carry provision in the bill that allows you, that states it's not against the law for you to carry a firearm, say, down the street, a loaded 30-30, in a safe manner. It prohibits and specifically says it's not okay to muzzle sweep anybody, fire warning shots, handle the gun in a reckless manner, and that only happens in Hollywood. It doesn't happen here in Montana. We do have some amendments to address a couple concerns in Sections 3, and we'll visit with about Section 3 when we get into that in greater detail. Sections 4, 5, and 6 are fairly self-explanatory. I won't go into those at this moment. Section 7 is a codification section, and then a good part of the meat of the bill is in Section 8. In 1991, the state legislature here in Montana approved the use of or the concealed carry of weapons outside of incorporated towns and cities. So that's roughly 99.4% of the land of Montana. You're allowed as a law-abiding citizen to carry a firearm. That was 18 years ago, and when that argument was held, there were the same people who were battling it then that are battling it now, that there would be blood in the streets, and it just has not turned out to be the case. What we seek to do with 228 is extend that right to carry law-abiding citizens inside those towns and cities. Currently, Alaska and Vermont both allow this. Vermont has allowed it forever. Alaska adopted it in 2003, and it's performed well. They haven't had any problems. Current opinion is you can take a 357, you can put it in your purse, you can put it in a briefcase, you can put it in a backpack. I can put that backpack on my shoulder, I can walk through downtown Helena, Billings, Bozeman, and that's not considered a violation of concealed carry laws because that's not on your person, that's a piece of luggage. When I take that 357 out of that backpack and slip it into my shoulder holster and walk down the street, suddenly I'm in violation. So all this bill would do is allow you to move that gun from the backpack into your holster and still be legal to carry. I want to move, Mr. Chairman, I want to move an amendment to House Bill Amendment HB 228. -003 of Representative Howard's.
Would you like that?
Have it posted and deemed read, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. So ordered, Representative Kearns.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, I will sit down and turn the microphone over to the sponsor of that amendment to address our amendment to Section 3, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? Representative Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Assembly. My main concern in sponsoring this amendment, as you can see on the screen, was the safety of our police officers. Having been in law enforcement for many years, the safety of our law enforcement officers was of paramount concern for me. What we did is simply just take a line out of, on page 2, line 2, to a person other than an identified police officer, and we essentially transferred it down to, on page 3, down to line 13, where it says negligently or purposely threatens a police officer with a firearm, displaying a firearm during the commission of a forcible felony, or displaying a firearm as part of a pattern of criminal street gang activity as defined under 458405. And I just recommend a due pass.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? Representative Kearns.
Yeah, this is a friendly amendment.
For what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Chairman, speak on the amendment.
Representative Kearns, this is technically your amendment. You cannot rise to speak in favor of your own amendment.
It's Representative Howard's amendment.
But you moved the amendment, Representative Kearns.
Okay.
Therefore, it's your amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sanju.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Will Representative Kearns yield to a question?
Representative Kearns, will you yield?
Mr. Chairman, I'll yield.
Representative Sanju.
Representative Kearns, could you tell me your feelings about this amendment?
Thank you, Representative Sanju. I view this as a favorable amendment, and it strengthens the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the amendment? Representative Minahan.
A question for Representative Kearns, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kearns, will you yield to a question?
Yes, I will, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Minahan.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Kearns, I'm just somewhat confused in that the in the amendment that you have under it's the third one down where you have negligently or purposely threatened a peace officer, and those are mental states that are currently in Montana Code annotated. And I wonder how would you would explain using those mental states, which I'm perfectly comfortable using because those are in statute, that they don't comport with the mental states further up in sections A, B, and C, in which you would include the mental states of intentionally, recklessly, and deliberately, none of which are currently defined in Montana Code or statute.
Representative Kearns.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Minahan. I believe the terms negligently or purposefully do adequately cover that, and it's just two words instead of three, but I think it covers the same mental state. We wanted to protect against someone who is negligently waving a gun around in front of an officer or somebody that would purposely do it. Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Kearns, would you care to close on your amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I close on the amendment. I urge the due pass.
Question now arises on the amendment of Representative Kearns. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
93 representatives have voted aye. 7 have voted no, Mr. Chairman.
Amendment 003 has passed. Further discussion on the bill, Representative Van Dyke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment 228-006, asked to be posted and deemed read, Mr. Chairman.
So ordered, Representative Van Dyke.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, I rise on this amendment. I'm an NRA member. There are NRA members on this side of the aisle, believe it or not. I'm a gun owner, both to hunt with and to protect my home. And I want to speak specifically to my colleagues from Billings and ask my colleagues from Billings a few questions. And then maybe if you're from Bozeman or Great Falls or whatever Butte, wherever you might be from, maybe you can think about how this could apply to your neighborhood. There's one part of this bill that bothers me in particular. And that is, anybody can carry a concealed firearm. In Montana, we have a process to allow for folks to carry concealed weapons. We all know about this. The Shooting Sports Association and others offer to give us the course every session. I realize that this is a law-abiding citizen is allowed to do this, but I want you to think about something, folks from Billings. Think about the summertime. Think about the kids playing in South Park. Think about the kids playing in Pioneer Park. The sponsor of the bill brought up your right to carry firearms in city parks. I imagine Representative Kearns is completely safe carrying a concealed weapon on him any time. I know I am. I'm a safe gun owner. The fact of the matter is, folks, not everybody is. If everybody was, we wouldn't have gun crime in this state. I appreciate Representative Kearns trying to expand gun rights in Montana. I support the Second Amendment, but I'm elected by a bunch of folks who live in town. And you know, at the end of the day, they want their kids to be safe. I may support the bill in its entirety, I may not, I don't know. But I'm asking you, I'm not saying there's gonna be blood in the streets either, but the streets are in my district. The streets aren't out in the county where you can carry a concealed weapon. Most people are out hunting or shooting gophers or doing whatever they're doing out in the county. My people are on the streets. And I don't think that anyone, if you feel like you need to carry a concealed weapon out on the streets or in the city parks where the kids are playing, go in and get certified to carry a concealed weapon. There's nothing wrong with our system right now. Not everybody needs to be carrying these for no good reason at all. It's a terrible idea. Mr. Chairman.
Discussion on the amendment. Representative Kearns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I resist this amendment principally to the fact that it strikes all of Section 8. Again, that's the movement of the 357 out of your backpack into your holster. Law-abiding citizens certainly are entitled to self-defense. Mr. Chairman.
Discussion on the amendment. Representative Cattell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, just real quickly, I hope that you will notice that this section does not delete 458-313 or 458-314, which talks about how felons cannot possess firearms. But more importantly, this section does not delete 458-328 and 458-351, and I want to read that to you. It says, for public safety purposes, a city or town may regulate the discharge of guns and firearms. A county, city, or town, or other local government unit has the power to prevent and suppress the carrying of concealed or unconcealed weapons to public assemblies, public owned buildings, parks, under its jurisdictions, etc., etc. So this bill in no way would stop local government authorities from making local ordinances and regulations which would prohibit carrying concealed or unconcealed weapons, for example, in public parks.
Further discussion, Representative Minahan.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I have a question for Representative Cattell. Questions, rather.
Representative Cattell, will you yield?
Yes.
Representative Minahan.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cattell, one of the things that Representative Van Dyke did not address in his amendment, and that is on the amendment number 4, paragraph 4, this says it strikes Section 10 in its entirety. Would you mind looking at the bill and telling us what Section 10, it's a repealer?
Section 10 or Section 8, number 3.
It's page 5, line 18, strike Section 10 in its entirety.
Section 10 repeals 317, but not 345-8-351, correct?
Correct. And so my question is, explain to this body, if you could, Representative Cattell, what 458-317 does. What is it that Mr. Representative Van Dyke is trying to get this body to strike out of the bill?
Representative Cattell.
I'd be happy to do that. 458-317 is the exceptions to the concealed weapon permit, and if you strike the provisions that you don't need to apply for a concealed weapon permit, then you don't need the exceptions to the concealed weapon permit, correct?
Representative Minahan.
Another question, Mr. Chairman.
Do you continue to yield, Representative Cattell?
I do.
And so who has these exceptions currently? Who is accepted from having to get a concealed weapons permit in order to carry a concealed weapon in Montana?
Representative Cattell.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, because currently you would need to apply for a concealed weapons permit. However, accepted people who do not have to apply are any peace officer in the state of Montana, an officer of the United States government authorized or can carry a concealed weapon, a person in actual service or a member of the National Guard, a person summoned to the aid of a person named in subsection 1, subsection A through subsection J through subsection C, a civil officer or other officer duty engaged in the discharge of official business, a probation or parole officer authorized to carry a firearm, a person issued a permit, a person with a permit recognized under 48-8-329, an agent of the Department of Justice or a criminal investigator in a county, attorney's office, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Essentially law enforcement type of individuals and government people.
Okay. Representative Minahan.
If I could ask another question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Cattell, do you continue to yield?
Yes.
Representative Minahan.
Okay, so my understanding is that currently in Montana, if you're a member of the National Guard, if you're a member of law enforcement, you don't need a concealed weapons permit to carry a concealed weapon. And so what Representative Kern's bill does is remove that, excuse me, well, no, the amendment is actually striking the repealer. It's confusing. Representative Kern's bill 228, as it exists, repeals the exceptions to the concealed weapons permit. And so it's a double negative here, but it is a question. So what I'm just wanting you to clarify, Kendall Van Dyke's bill wants to leave that exception in place in current statute.
Mr. Chairman, if Representative Kern's bill deletes the requirement to apply for a concealed weapons permit, then you no longer need the exception to apply for the concealed weapons permit. And so therefore, removing the exception is exactly how the bill should be drafted when you removed the requirement of application.
Okay.
Representative Minahan.
So,
Representative Cattell, will you continue to yield?
Yes.
Representative Minahan.
Okay, so if the bill passes, then essentially we are just nullifying the need to have concealed weapons permits because it's no longer a crime to carry a concealed weapon unless you are using it to commit a crime.
Not true. Mr. Chair, Representative, because 314 and 48-8-314 and 48-8-313 still makes it unlawful for a felon to possess a concealed, possess any weapon at all, and it still makes it unlawful for all other, you know, other individuals. Those things stay in place. So it's not true to say that anyone now can possess or carry a firearm. But all those people who are not forbidden under statute, for example, because they have a felony, can, if Representative Kearns' bill pass, can carry a concealed weapon without making application.
Representative Minahan.
Another question then.
Representative Cattell, will you continue to yield?
Yes.
So, Representative Minahan, through the chair, please.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cattell, is a stun gun a weapon currently for possessing, if you're in possession of a stun gun, does that constitute a weapon for purposes of the concealed weapons law?
Representative Cattell.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to redirect that question to Representative Minahan, a prosecutor, but my guess is since the definition of weapon is very broad and includes knives and even like brass knuckles, I would guess that that might also be true. Do you know the answer to that, Representative Minahan?
Representative
Chairman,
Minahan.
Representative Cattell, the answer is yes. Currently, a stun gun is a weapon for purposes of a concealed weapon permit. And may I ask another question, Representative Cattell?
Representative Cattell, will you continue to yield?
Yes.
Representative Minahan.
Representative Cattell, are you familiar with the name Nathaniel Barr Jonah?
Representative Cattell.
Yes, he was a pretty horrific individual who was convicted of crimes in the city of Great Falls.
Okay.
Representative Minahan.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cattell, do you know the circumstance?
Representative Cattell, would you continue to yield?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to know where this line of questioning is going since...
Okay. Well, what I want to demonstrate is through Representative Cattell. Oh, well, I'll speak to the bill.
Representative Minahan.
Okay. I'll speak to the amendment, excuse me, because the amendment is addressed at repealing this section that says that it's no longer a crime to carry a concealed weapons without a permit. And so if some of you may recall, there was a man named Nathaniel Bar Jonah. He was released from prison for sexually assaulting boys, and he moved to Great Falls. He was dressed up as a peace officer early one morning, and he was it was dark. It was before school started, and a Great Falls police officer saw him near a school. This man was a detective, and he knew Bar Jonah's history. He knew that he'd previously been in prison for sexually assaulting boys, and he knew that he'd previously been charged in Great Falls for sexually assaulting an 8-year-old boy. That case was dismissed because the 8-year-old his mother didn't want him to testify, and the prosecutor couldn't get in Bar Jonah's prior sex crimes because of Rule 404B. And so another police officer, a uniform, came and said to Mr. Bar Jonah, "What are you doing here?" Mr. Bar Jonah couldn't explain, and the officer said, "What do you have in your pocket?" And Bar Jonah said, "I have a stun gun in his pocket." That was the particularized suspicion for the stop, which led to his arrest. So if we repeal the requirement that you cannot carry a concealed weapon, which includes a stun gun, you can stand in the middle of a playground in Montana with a stun gun or a knife or any other weapon, and it won't be a crime unless you're using it to commit a crime. If you take a look at your bill, ladies and gentlemen, it says on the bottom of page 4, it says every person who carries or bears upon the person if using to commit a criminal offense. And that's the amended section. That's what this bill does. So you could carry a concealed weapon anywhere, and the only time you're going to implicate the law is if you are using it to commit a crime. If you want serial killer child molesters to stand on a playground with a concealed weapon, this is the bill to do it.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for Representative Minahan.
Representative Minahan, will you yield?
Yes.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Minahan, would not federal law preclude a person carrying a concealed weapon on a school playground?
Representative Minahan.
Representative Villa, Representative Moore, that's correct. He could stand across the street or in the block down the street, and that's where Bar Jonah was arrested. So you are correct.
Representative Butcher.
Mr. Chairman, a question for Representative Minahan.
Representative Minahan, will you yield?
Yes, of course.
Representative Butcher.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Minahan, I found it interesting you used this Bar Jonah as an example of trying to make a case. Wasn't Bar Jonah a convicted felon in another state?
Representative Minahan.
Representative Villam. That's true. But if you look, I believe, under the prohibited person statute under Montana law, the only people that are prohibited from carrying a concealed weapons ever, I believe, are those people who've used a gun in the commission of a prior crime, and then certain other crimes.
Representative Butcher?
Just a comment on this. I think there's an error there. I'd hate to see this get...
I may be wrong.
Wait, that, Representative that Minahan, true. Representative Butcher has the floor, please.
Just to speak to the bill, or this amendment, I believe we have an error there in that statement, because if I understand it right, a convicted felon would not be allowed, so it'd still be illegal for that example. So I'm concerned we use an emotional example like that that's not a pertinent example for the case he's trying to make.
Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Van Dyke, would you care to close on your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, we've heard from the lawyers and the prosecutors in the body. That was interesting. I'm not a lawyer, but I think I know good and bad policy when I see it, at least from my worldview. And I got an email about a week ago from one of my neighbors in Billings. And I live pretty close to downtown Billings. Not too much crime, but there is here and there. And it said that her parents' house got broke into a week prior, and there's been a string of burglaries in my neighborhood. And they spotted one of the guys driving away, and you know, if somebody's breaking in your house and doing you harm, I believe you shouldn't have to hit retreat. In fact, I sponsored a bill that said you shouldn't have to retreat. Now, these folks who are causing problems in Billings in my neighborhood, I don't know if they're running around city parks. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if they're felons or not. But what this bill does, as unamended, if those people are reading the newspaper tomorrow or watching TV tonight, it's telling those idiots driving around, don't forget your gun. We need to make good policy here, folks. I think this bill becomes more workable if we leave the concealed weapons law the way it is. If you want a concealed weapons law in this state, and I imagine there's several of you in this body who have one, you can get one. It's not a problem. Let's not hand them out like candy in the park.
Question now arises on the motion of Representative Van Dyke. Those in favor of the motion vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chairman, 46 representatives have voted aye. 54 have voted no. Mr. Chairman.
The amendment has failed. Is there any discussion on the bill as once amended? Representative Wiseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the body, I rise reluctantly, but I have a strong need to revisit our history on this bill. Most of us in this room know that this bill is a revisitation of the most malevolent spirit of the legendary last legislative session. The spirit of rumor, the spirit of intimidation, of smash mouth and scorched earth. The spirit of death threats made against members of this body over this bill last session. This bill addresses no need. We have the right to defend ourselves. This bill mostly provides a way for young thugs to engage in intimidation, and it provides a get out of jail free card for criminals. This bill is wrong. We don't need it, and we ought not to inflict this bill on our entire law enforcement community, which is saying no. Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the bill. Representative Regier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to speak to the bill. I've got a lot of emails and contacts about this bill, and I would say maybe 3 or 4% have been negative, and they all focused on the domestic violence part. And for those of you that have a concern with that, I would like to read a portion of an email that I got from a gentleman, a citizen of Montana, that addresses that. And he says, quote, I am writing to encourage you to support House Bill 228. My entire professional career spanning 37 years in Montana has been devoted to helping the downtrodden. An important element of my work has involved providing assistance to abused women. One such woman used a firearm to protect herself in a domestic violence situation. She had been beaten to the point many times where she had been hospitalized. Protection by law enforcement was ineffective. A county attorney charged her with a felony, and she was forced into proving her innocence and failed as there was no witnesses. She was convicted of a felony, and her conviction was upheld by the Montana Supreme Court. Under House Bill 228, the tables would be turned, and the county attorney must prove her guilty. I'd like to encourage you to do pass.
Further discussion on the bill, Representative Butcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. like everybody else, we've been getting a lot of emails and support, and the only opposition I seem to be getting is appears to be a form letter from a few of the law enforcement people. But I received one here I'd like to share just a couple of sentences. This is a citizen. Contrary to the position of a number of opponents, this bill does not in any way pose a threat to public safety or the safety of law enforcement personnel. As a retired attorney who has undergone police officer training and is a son of a career law enforcement officer, I can assure you that if I felt otherwise, I would not be supporting this bill. And I think that probably pretty well summarizes the emails and phone calls that I've received on this bill. I'm really looking through it. I don't see any boogeymen here, and I think it really clarifies some very important points.
Further discussion, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel compelled to speak against this bill. I want to carry a voice into this body that I heard when I was working, going door to door and campaigning for this seat. I spoke to a really wonderful family, a police officer, who was at the door with his wife and with their young children there. And he asked me where I stood on a bill that was before this body in 2007. And I wasn't too familiar with it at the time. And he explained it to me, and it provided essentially the same kinds of things that this legislation has before us today. And he told me, you know, my wife and I talked about that bill and this bill, and if it had passed, we had made up we'd made a decision as a family that as much as I love law enforcement, as much as I love Montana, I will be leaving this state to practice law enforcement in another state. And I'm on the Judiciary Committee. We had a whole lineup of people from law enforcement who share that sentiment. And we had another young police officer, just a great guy, Jesse Slaughter from Great Falls, representing the Police Protective Association. And so I had the opportunity to ask him in the hearing how he felt about this legislation. And I shared with him the conversation I heard on the doors from a man who is on the front lines in our neighborhoods every day defending our families in our neighborhoods, and asked him what his response was to that. And he said, yeah, my wife and I have also had that conversation. And if this legislation passes, I will be looking for work in another state. And so I really urge you to very seriously consider your vote on this bill, because what we are doing is we are putting our best and our brightest in the way of harm, and we're putting them at a severe disadvantage as they try and defend our neighborhoods. And I have to tell you that if you were at the hearing, you saw the pictures that were handed out by our county attorney. Those pictures came from my district, and I just don't want to put our law enforcement officers in that kind of position, and I'm going to have to vote no on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Cattell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I certainly respect those who feel compelled to vote no on the bill, but let me tell you why I feel just as compelled to vote yes. First and foremost, one of the most important things in this bill is switching the burden of proof. I will always stand for the rights of the innocent, and one of the basic rights of the innocent is innocent until proven guilty. Our Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals switches that burden of proof and says, and I'm reading from the model jury instructions, the government must prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant did not act in reasonable self-defense. This bill would move us in line with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. It should not be easy for prosecutors to take away a liberty interest. It should be difficult, and this bill moves that to that level. Second, the Castle Doctrine. I firmly believe in the Castle Doctrine, and I believe that Castle Doctrine follows me, not just in an occupied structure. Again, this bill reaffirms that right, and I think that's an important right. Section 3, brandishment, defensive display of firearms. Let me ask you this. Is it right to have a section of the code, 4618.221, which has an increased penalty for brandishment, and never define it anywhere in the code? so that it's totally arbitrary and ambiguous as to what that means, and yet we can have enhanced sentencing. This bill, for the first time with Section 3, makes it clear what brandishment is or is not. And again, our citizens have a right to a liberty interest and should not be subject to incarceration for a term that has never been defined in the code. Next, Section 4. It requires police officers to investigate alleged evidence of self-defense. Should we not reach the truth? Should not police investigate the entire area of crime? Again, this is just moving towards finding truth. Let me ask you the other question on this bill, and that has to do with landlord and tenant rights. Long time ago in our history, we gave rights, voting rights and free speech rights, only to those who owned land. This bill makes it clear that Second Amendment rights attach whether you're a tenant or you're a fee simple owner of real property. Again, those people that live in my district in apartments have exactly the same Second Amendment rights that I have because I own a home. And this bill helps reconfirm those Second Amendment rights. That's important. And finally, there's a small provision in this bill that says that I can use reasonable force to detain somebody. It already says we as citizens have a right of self-defense. Let me ask all of you this. When someone is raping my child and running away, I hope all of you have the courage to detain him. When somebody has hit somebody over the head and knocked them to the ground, I hope you have the courage to detain them and to use reasonable force to do so. That's what it means to be a member of this community. And this bill clearly protects that use of reasonable force and refers to the force used, which is already in Montana Code, so it does not expand that force. It is because of the civil liberty interest. And as an ex-statewide member of the ACLU, I have done my duty in terms of civil liberty interests, and I've always stood to protect civil liberties. I believe this bill does exactly that, and that's why I'm supporting it.
Further discussion, Representative Ingraham. Representative Ingraham waves off. Representative Hollinsworth. Representative Hollinsworth waves off. Representative Minahan.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address the bill.
Representative Minahan.
And first, I'd like to address the point that I did not make clear before. Montana has a lifetime prescription against prior felons who've used a weapon in the commission of a prior felony that they can no longer possess a firearm ever. But for the vast majority of people, like Nathaniel Barjona, who'd served their sentence in Massachusetts, Montana is what we call a restoration of rights state. Once you've served your sentence to discharge, that prohibition in firearms doesn't carry with you. When you hear us say that we're prosecuting somebody for felon and being in possession of a firearm, that's a federal prescription that they prosecute for people who are currently a felony that are charged with being in possession of a felony or in possession of a weapon. Because Montana is a restoration of rights states, that only applies to somebody who's currently on a suspended or paroled sentence. Once they've served that, they're no longer a prohibited person under federal law. Addressing the bill, there are a number of things which are really problematic. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals does not interpret Montana statutes. That's the Montana Supreme Court's duty. We have a right to self-defense, as Montana has always had a right to self-defense. And most of the law that we have relating to the laws that we have in the Title 45 of the Montana Code have been adopted in the last three or four decades. 1973, Montana adopted the current form of the self-defense law that we have. And Montana's self-defense form is justifiable use of force in defense of person and in defense of an occupied structure. Any suggestion that you've heard on the floor today that we don't have these self-defense rights is just completely not true. I've been a prosecutor for nearly 15 years, and in that time, I've had some dealings with concealed weapons permit holders, but not very many, because concealed weapons permit holders are among the most law-abiding, conscientious, safety-minded people that we ever deal with. But this law doesn't protect those people. Montana has reciprocity agreements with other states that allow other states to recognize our concealed weapons permit holders, and we do the same for them. And so I have questions in my mind as to whether or not our Attorney General will be able to further negotiate concealed weapons reciprocity agreements with other states if we completely abandoned our concealed weapons permit process. And that won't serve the law-abiding men and women in the state who have concealed weapons permits. Frankly, I think the exemption in the law here that we have today that applies specifically to law enforcement officers is really a poke in the eye at the law enforcement community. Because with a concealed weapons permit, you don't have to undergo a criminal background check when you want to buy a weapon. You don't have to wait for 5 days before getting one. So if some guy who's in the National Guard gets out, goes to the Law Enforcement Academy, takes a job with the Helena Police Department, and they want to issue him a gun or he wants to buy a gun, he has to go through a background check. He has to wait 5 days. Frankly, I think that's just insulting to law enforcement. I have particular problem with page 1. It's subsection 5, and this is what Representative Cattell was talking about, the Ninth Circuit. Currently, self-defense, which we call justifiable use of force, it's an affirmative defense. The defendant has to file a notice with the court within 30 days of his arraignment of his intent to rely on that defense. He can't sandbag the prosecution at the trial without letting us know that that's what he's going to do. There are about 5 affirmative defenses in which defendants have to file notice: alibi, mistaken identity, compulsion. And so in those cases, he files notice with the court, prosecution is aware of it, and then we go to trial. The burden of proof remains on the state whether or not this is a self-defense claim or anything else. The state has to prove each and every burden of the offense, or each and every element of the offense. If the jury finds the defendant guilty, the burden then shifts to the defendant, and the defendant has to raise a reasonable doubt of his guilt because of his self-defense argument. This isn't something novel. This isn't something new. This has been the law in Montana for decades, and there's a whole line of cases on that point. And I just quoted one. It says, the state has the burden of proving beyond reasonable doubt every element of the offense charged. If the defendant raises an affirmative defense, the defendant has the burden of producing sufficient evidence on the issue to raise a reasonable doubt of his guilt. And there are about 5 recent, 20-year cases where that's been the case. Finally, in domestic violence cases, this is of particular concern, because if you look at subsection 5 here on the front page, this says nothing about weapons. Take a look at that. It says, if self-defense is asserted by a defendant in a criminal action, self-defense can be asserted in any crime against the person, from deliberate homicide all the way down to misdemeanor assault. It doesn't have to have a weapon involved, and most of the weapons violations cases we have involving violence are not guns. They're bats, they're knives, they're other things. So in a domestic violence case, if a defendant is arrested after having beaten his wife and doesn't say anything to the cops when they come and get him, he could then raise self-defense as an issue, and the only evidence, if this passes, would be to call her to the stand and have her disprove his self-defense claim, because the state would now have the burden to show that he was not reasonable in using self-defense. All the time, he would be threatening her not to testify. By passing this, you're putting the defendant in charge of his own prosecution.
Representative Minahan, your time has expired. Representative Cafaro.
Mr. Chairman, speak to the bill.
Representative Cafaro.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll pick up where Representative Minahan left off. I have lots of concerns about the bill, but starting with the Section 1, Number 5. Because self-defense, it changes the presumption of self-defense, and I'd like to talk to that in the context of domestic violence. Domestic violence is very complicated. Oftentimes it happens between 2 people with no witnesses. And the state is not in the homes of these folks. But yet the state has to prove that the abuser, if that abuser says self-defense, now has to prove that it wasn't self-defense. And as Representative Minahan started to point out, how do they prove that other than bringing the victim up on the stand? And so let's think about who victims are. Victims are deeply involved, intimately involved with their abuser. They are controlled, they're often isolated, their finances, their children are controlled, they're cut off from family and friends, and now they're standing on the stand looking in the eye of the person who controls all of those things, and it's up to that woman to make the case. And there's one other piece that's often not talked about. When a person is abused, especially over a length of time, they trade in their hope for survival. They have no hope of ever getting out. They trade it in for survival. And one of those survival mechanisms is they completely have lost faith in their own perceptions, in their own instincts. And so sitting on that stand when they're being questioned by an attorney, and the attorney asks them very specific questions, are you sure that you didn't threaten him? Are you sure you didn't throw the flower pot at him before he beat you up? All of those perceptions come into play, and she's looking now at the abuser who she may have in her life for the rest of her life, especially if children are involved. And I think that this bill does not, as much, I appreciate the speaker's point on balancing domestic violence, but in almost all cases, if this bill passes, the victims will be put further in harm's way. The second thing, and really important, I'm a person that goes to bed and I sleep solid for 5 hours, my house could burn down, nothing wakes me up. But last night, I woke up every hour with a nightmare about some violent thing happening as an outcome of this bill. I read the bill inside and out. I read every part that had been amended out in committee, all of the cites, all of the cross-references. I read all of the current law, which is very strong for self-defense. And I know we have a lot of pressure on us from our constituents. But if you read this bill, the number one priority, or at least for me, my number one priority when I came here, as trite as it may sound, was to improve the lives of my constituents. And if this bill passes, I'll be stepping over their safety. I will not be protecting them, thinking about my next election. And I think, number one, we need to think about the safety and protection of our constituents. I object to this bill. I do not support it. And I hope you won't either. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the bill, Representative Campbell.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address the bill.
This bill,
I was one of just a couple Democrats, actually, that vote for gun bills. I have both of my previous sessions. I'm a country girl. I hunt. I own guns. I have guns in my home. I carry guns in my vehicle. My family hunts. We're gun people, and we vote for good gun bills. However, I want to talk about something different. And what I want to talk about is the manner in which I see this happening. About every 2 years, we come up here, we want to represent the 9,000 people in our district the very best that we can. I see our house becoming divided. I see it becoming divided by powerful gun lobbies. I vote for gun bills, but it doesn't mean I don't get nasty messages. It doesn't mean I don't get threatening messages. And I vote for gun bills. I get A's and B's by the gun groups because I vote for gun bills. However, what I see is every 2 years, they come into town, they ramp up the emotion, ramp it up, ramp it up. We got us running helter-skelter, we're losing sleep. We got people on both sides of the aisles. Believe me, I've talked to half a dozen on both sides of the aisle that don't like this gun, but they're afraid of the powerful gun lobby that will be trying to beat us in our next election. We have good gun laws in Montana. Taken from the words of Gary Marbit in Gun Laws of Montana, for Second Amendment rights, page 7, Montana is the freest state in the Union, which probably also means the freest state in the world. They get us to thinking we have to vote for one or the other. Should we vote for this one? Oh, well, maybe we can go vote for this one. Oh, no, we better vote for this one. We don't have to vote for any of them, folks. We've got good gun laws. We don't need to change the laws. They're just fine the way they are. If I need a concealed weapon, I could carry a concealed weapon. There's no need to change the laws. Some people come here with a single issue. I'm going to get reelected with my gun bill. None of us come here having the luxury of having a single issue. We need to deal with all of the issues. Every issue comes before us. As lawmakers, we need to be careful. Whenever we pass laws that in any way jeopardize the peace officers, the people who commit themselves to our safety 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we need to really think about that. I've been pressured for two sessions and I had to sign a gun bill. If you look on the top of this one, I sponsored it. But I don't like the messages that are coming into my caucus. Good people who get up, tie on their load every day and go to work, trying to make this a better place to live in. They go teach kids, they work in emergency rooms, they're nurses, they're attorneys, they're good people. But they get the nastiest mailings that you could even ever imagine if they vote against gun bills. We don't need any of these bills, folks. Don't let anybody pressure you. The gun laws of Montana are about the freest in any state in the union, which probably also means the freest in the world. Don't let anybody pressure you. There are a lot more issues that we need to deal with than arming people. You can keep your guns. There's nothing wrong with the laws we have. Take the pressure off and sleep good tonight, every one of you. The gun laws of Montana were put together by good legislators, gun owners, gun lovers, hunters. We don't need to change anything, folks. Get a good night's sleep tonight. Vote no.
Cloture is in order at this point. Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be short. I'd like to echo one thing that the last representative said, and that's that I also have been lobbied. Somehow, I don't care about women if I vote for this bill. How can that be? The very first bill I ever cared about in this body in 05 was to give an ounce of protection to victims of domestic violence and stalking. But somehow now I don't care. I want you to all look at the face. I am a woman that hunts, that owns guns, and that has a concealed weapon permit. And one of the many emails, I've been lobbied just like the former legislator has. And I want to tell you I care about women. I care about preventing domestic violence. In my area, I answered the crisis hotline to do what I could do to help. And if someone thinks that this bill would allow anyone who is lawfully in place or location to shoot to kill if they feel threatened with bodily injury, that's what this bill would be, so I'm going to vote for it. Thank you.
Representative Wiseman.
Mr. Chairman, I move cloture.
Cloture is in order. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion carries. Representative Kearns, would you care to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I close.
The question now arises on the motion of Representative Kearns that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 228 that it recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chairman, 58 representatives have voted aye, 42 have voted no. Mr. Chairman.
House Bill 228 has passed second reading.